Welcome back to another segment of U Talk on 101.5 FM. When looking at the news, sometimes things can seem bleak and depressing. However, efforts aren't futile, and we, as individuals, can make a difference. One of those ways is to get involved in grassroots and nonprofit organizations. Our interviews in today's episode include a college student who's become a board member of Asian Women of Winnipeg and Abilities Manitoba, an organization which is supporting those with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Let's get into it.
My name is Devia Sharma, and I am a first-year student at the University of Manitoba. My role at the Asian Women of Winnipeg is just as a board member, and I'm the youngest member on the council itself. So it's definitely a very unique position to be in. And the other, I think, very cool part about my identity is that So I've lived exactly half my life in India and exactly half my life in Canada. So it's a very, very unique position.
That is a very interesting perspective. Most people have like, oh, I moved here when I was like 2 years old sort of thing, or like, oh, I just got off the boat sort of thing. So that's a very interesting perspective. So why don't you tell me about that life in India versus life here, and kind of like the balancing act of the two, like what was it like just living life there? And then just, yeah, one of the things we hear often is like culture shock of people coming over and being like, I don't know what the heck is going on here. I don't understand all these sorts of customs or just societal norms sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. So I think like India is also very unique in the sense that there's so many cultures and languages. And I first of all, I grew up in Punjab, which is sort of in the northern region of India. So in regards to that, I also just went to a private Catholic school. So I knew English growing up, and that was something that was really important. But I also knew Hindi and Punjabi, which are the two languages that are typically spoken in the area of Punjab. So the accent piece was definitely really unique to me when we came here. So we immigrated here when I was 9 years old in 2014. So when we came here, that like language was there, but it was kind of hard to understand with the accent piece. So I definitely got used to and adapted to that. And then the multiculturalism that's in Canada is also very, very unique, I would say. Although in India, there are those different, you know, languages, cultures, religions, dialects, and all of that. And I think that's very special. It's even more diverse in Canada. And it's just like, it's mind-blowing, I would say. And when we were in elementary school, one of the biggest ideas that was communicated to us and was really like hammered into us was that diversity is our strength. And I think that's so true, because if we're able to come together and share our experiences and learn from each other, I think there's all the more growth and learning and so many possibilities there.
When you're talking about diversity is our strength, when we're looking at just population growth in Canada in general, immigration is the driving force to what kind of grows our country. It's mostly people coming in there, and just the amount of ideas or things, and just Canada has been built on immigrants, or I guess modern Canada, or what we consider like the crown of Canada sort of thing. And yeah, just having people here learning. And I grew up in a smaller city, which was mostly pretty monocultural. So coming to Winnipeg and just seeing all the different people, and of course the community I've come from is changing now as more people are immigrating. But it was really eye-opening for myself to be like, wow, there's so many different people of so many different backgrounds, so many different thoughts. And it's just cool to learn and find out, you know, what sort of things everyone brings to the table. So when you're coming over and you're building life here and learning about that multiculturalism and everything and the importance of kind of diversity and celebration. Is that kind of why you wanted to join Asian Women of Winnipeg? Because you don't see many people your age get involved in an organization like that.
The reason why I wanted to join was that spirit of volunteerism. I think I found my identity through that, just like the idea of volunteering. And I think that's also really, really special to Canada, because of course there's opportunities to volunteer everywhere around the world, but specifically when I came here when I was in grade 5, and we were actually doing this fundraiser, and it was around Terry Fox. And I think he's one of the most prime examples of that selfless giving and volunteering and giving back to the community. And at a very, very young age, we were already sort of involved in these fundraisers and you know, just volunteering, giving back around the school. So I think building off of that, everyone sort of had their like niche when they were in grade 5, whether you were involved with like soccer, Timbits, or you were like a dancing person. You know, girls would do like gymnastics and it was like the cool thing to be in. And everyone sort of had their little niche. I had a lot of trouble finding that. And I think volunteering was where I really like was able to connect right away, because it honestly, like, it gave me a sense of gratitude and like, I thought I was actually impacting the world, and this was my way of making a change. So as my journey went on, I started getting more involved with different clubs, associations, XYZ, and I joined AVAL probably in grade 10, I would say, because I was just really like, it was a coincidence, because I believe the executive director, who's Sharon Tapia, she actually asked me, she's like, oh, I saw blah, 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 and then we would love for you to join. And it's like a 3-year term. And I'm like, I'm 100% down. AY was actually the first board I ever joined. So that was very, very unique. And I think it's given me a lot of opportunity to have that event planning aspect and like being able to share my culture and being able to actually like even learn my culture in Canada and how that fits in. So I think that's really special.
Well, it's a great opportunity to give back to your community. And, you know, for a lot of people, it takes a long time to find themselves or find an opportunity to give back or grow. I know I'm starting to go on that journey right now, volunteering, learning a little bit more now. But I mean, it would have been really cool to get that back in high school instead of being kind of a loser, dumbass, just going through high school. But it's really cool to hear kind of your perspective. And I think it's just very interesting when we're looking at statistics, voting habits, as well as just ideology of younger generations, of this desire to make a difference. I know social media and everything and social media addiction is a challenge, but a lot of people, even if it's just sharing things or advocacy through social media, are really heavily involved, whether that's in multiculturalism, reconciliation, volunteerism, seeing you and others getting really involved in politics and just trying to make their communities better in a world that seems to, you know, be stumbling back sometimes is, I should say, what is the word? It's very optimistic to see younger generations actually care about things, because it's way too easy to fall into nihilism with everything that goes on. And yeah, just coming back to it, diversity is our strength. Everyone's going to have an idea, and together we can utilize those ideas to make a difference. So being on the board of Asian Women of Winnipeg, how's the experience been so far? What sort of things or have you done, events you've sort of planned, and I guess what are you kind of looking forward to continuing to be on there.
AWOW is also unique in the sense where it's like Asian women of Winnipeg. So there's also that female empowerment aspect, which I also think is really, really special. We've had several events where, you know, we've celebrated women. So last year there was a special emphasis on women of Asian descent for that Women's Month. And this year we actually did at the Canadian Museum of Human Rights. And we celebrated women of all different cultures. And oftentimes we invite politicians to some of our events. And like you said, because of that, I've also had that opportunity to interact in that political realm, which once again, I think like our generation, we're definitely in that boat where we're really trying to see that change through. And I appreciate that Asian Women of Winnipeg has given me the opportunity to help in that sort of aspect as well. And it's also that I'm learning a lot from some of these women who, you know, were...
Oh, yeah. So many of them are so dedicated exactly. And have done so accomplished.
Exactly. Like they were in the shoes that I was in, but way back when, but now they're still continuing to make that change and they've been through that experience. So I get to learn from that and hopefully make it even better. Oftentimes they talk about, you know, who we're going to hand the next like chain of command to, or like what's going to happen after. And they're always preparing us for, you know, things like emceeing, how do we actually organize things behind the scenes, and how do you pull sponsors in? And I think it's that bond is really, really special because it's generational, and it really like connects you to different communities.
Yeah, and that's a big challenge that many cultural organizations are going through right now, getting younger people involved, because for a lot of them, it's a lot of the first immigrants who came in, start an organization, a place where they could build community. And, you know, if they had kids and everything, and they've kind of adjusted in school and adjusted to Canadian culture, a lot of them are like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go into this place where it's just, you know, a bunch of older people that are just doing sorts of cultural things. That's not really my cup of tea. But it's really cool to see your perspective of getting in and getting involved. What sort of advice would you give people, or maybe, okay, let's break it into two parts. For a cultural organization, how do you think they can better attract the youth and younger generations to join? And from your perspective of youth, what sort of words of encouragement would you give them to get involved in these cultural organizations?
Mm-hmm. I think it just comes back to that main message that diversity is our strength. So really keeping that in mind for organizations specifically, and like you said, I think our generation's so keen and optimistic, and it's inspiring because I'm just going to speak in regards to the University of Manitoba.
Yeah, no
what
worries.
I saw there. We have so many cultural organizations, like student clubs, I should say. Like, we have approximately 200 student clubs, and a lot of them are very, very cultural focused, and the like students do want to get involved with them. They find oftentimes international students, when they come in, like they find that sense of community within these student clubs and student organizations. So there's definitely a need for them to help spread that message. Okay. Of diversity.
So maybe it's more uniting between these cultural clubs at schools and universities with these pre-established organizations.
Definitely. We've seen that. Like, I think oftentimes there's so many different organizations that exist with a similar message, and they just need to connect and collaborate and put those puzzle pieces together so that that generational, you know, that information passed from generation to generation, because there's definitely that need. We've seen it. And I think it, like, if there's that opportunity to collaborate, I think that that really surpasses expectation and can really send one message of diversity.
Well, it could really help out and fill out different things, like for those who are older, like they have experience, they have wisdom, they have knowledge that they can share with youth. And youth are very technologically and social media literate and engaged. And for I know there are some organizations, when you go, you see their website, you're like, wow, was this invented in like 1999 sort of thing? Or like, well, let's see what's their social media presence. Only Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's definitely advantages that can come from that collaboration and unity.
100%. Like even for Ava, we actually used to have like a Facebook page and a Twitter page, but we didn't really have Instagram, and we've recently started using that. And we started using our, you know, our website a little bit more. And we, for like, you know, our graphics, we would have used like Adobe, and now there's things like Canva, and like I'm introducing these new.
Oh, Canva's a life changer.
It's a gem. Yeah. So then when I like, so during one of our meetings, we were looking at designing a potential poster for an event, and they're like, Debbie, can you do this, this, and this? And I'm like, yeah, for sure. And like, while the meeting's going on, I'm like, done the poster. And like, whoa. And it's just like, I think it really like helps if there's that like you said, that collaboration piece happens, because that technology piece I think is really huge. And although there's things like social media addictions that exist, I think within this up and coming generation, and I think like even with the older generation, even when you go on the bus, like everyone's on their phone.
Oh, I've definitely seen older people who scroll on Facebook.
Yeah.
Like just the doom scrolling, they never stop.
Wow. That's shocking to me. And like the thing, like things like texting while driving, like I just can't, like it's hard to fathom the fact that we're dealing with issues like that in our current world, where social media is so addictive, and now we're like looking at therapy to get rid of like your phone addiction, and there's like apps that, you know,
Help balance out your time.
Yeah, like it's just absolutely crazy to me. And like, you know, apps like Instagram and Facebook exist, and they have these algorithms within them to like keep you scrolling. And then within the app, there's like the time limit feature. It's so counterintuitive. It's fascinating. It's shocking. But I think, just coming back to the point, I think there's benefits to it as well.
Yeah, it's definitely a tool, and like any tool, it can be abused. So yeah, it's finding that balance of things, because yeah, you need to get your presence out there. You need to let people know. It's like, hey, what are these sorts of events that are mm-hmm. going on? Like, we're having a community barbecue or a community gathering for all ages sort of thing. It's like, oh, we want to have some contests, or
yeah,
get a group together for Folklorama,
mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. So yeah, it's a great tool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just for AWOW, what are some things that are coming up in this next year?
There's lots of exciting stuff. I know that each year we've had, you know, our bigger events, which would be the Lori Mela. We, of course, do the Women's Empowerment Month, just really celebrating that. And Mother's Day is a really, really big one for us. So things around women empowerment and that cultural aspect, and connecting all sorts of communities. And one thing I will say, when we had our Lori Mela, we actually had upwards of, I would say, 2,000 people attend. And that was really special, because people from all different communities came together to celebrate. And it was at the RBC Convention Center. It couldn't have gone better. So we're hoping for really, really big events like that in this upcoming year.
Yeah, talking with Sharon and some of the other people there, it's just really cool, the work that you're doing, empowering women, celebrating Asian heritage and Asian culture. And it's just so fascinating. I know we're like a little bit away or outside of Asian Heritage Month, but how did that go? Well, what sort of events and things were held there?
Yeah, so for Asian Heritage Month, it went really, really well. We, of course, there's an Asian Heritage Society that Sharon Tapia also sits on, and they organized that event at the Forks, which went over very, very well. Like, it was very well attended. Some of our board members had performed there, and we actually emceed part of the event. So that was really, really special.
Wow, that's so cool. So I guess just when we're looking at just Winnipeg in general, and especially since, you know, we're coming up to a new election in October and everything. And you know, it's important that we all get involved to work towards the future. I guess just for potential voters out there, when we're looking at, you know, cultural diversity continuing to build our province, what sort of things do you think are important that we should be looking out for from the perspective of a student?
International student fees, I think, are a really, really big thing. So looking at that, and cost of living, of course, is a huge aspect. So looking at potentially things from a financial perspective, and then, of course, that diversity sort of aspect as well, not just diversity within culture, but also are we looking at healthcare? Who is that provided to? What type of healthcare is there? Because there's so much in that aspect. Are we respecting, you know, different gender norms and stuff? And that's another thing that I think is of essence to students. And where exactly money and tax dollars are being invested, and who that track record side of things, you know, what party and that party politics side of things, what party has kept their promises, what are their priorities for this upcoming year, and really looking at the different ways that this election could go, because I think it's really up in the air right now.
Yeah, it's very interesting looking at polling data, seeing like who's ahead, what sort of things. And yeah, I know for a lot of people, they're like, ugh, voting, it's such a pain. Why are we talking about voting and everything? It's like, well, it'll change the lives of everyone. Like, who's in charge of our province determines, you know, what sort of opportunities there are for immigrants coming in. Because, you know, one of the biggest challenges in Canada is our housing. It was just a couple weeks ago, I think Canada hit that 40 million mark. And then afterwards, like, we had already reached like 140,000 in addition since there. And then you're looking at the yearly investments in housing, and it's only like, oh yeah, we're committed to creating 200,000 new homes in Canada. It's like, what? That's not enough. We've already almost broken that number.
Yeah, definitely. I will say there's a lot of like housing challenges. I actually recently went to, I know this doesn't pertain to our province specifically, but I know that the federal election is also approaching. If we look at even just different provinces, and specifically BC, like the cost of living there is absolutely like skyrocketing high. In the city of Vancouver, like that is probably one of the most unaffordable places. If we look at somewhere like Toronto, where, you know, living wages and that, where you work and how you live don't really match up. So there's a lot there as well. And even within like Manitoba, we see our interest rates going up, bread, milk, basic necessities like that, like they are through the roof.
And another thing is like, when we're looking at provincial and federal elections is, when we're looking at diversity and culture, is how our governments treat our like First Nations and Indigenous folks. Because we're seeing in the news with the barricades outside the Brady Road, there's a lot of conversations going around to be like, well, how do we balance things that are going on right now? Because, you know, as people are coming in, we want to work towards a more a progressive future for all, and we can't do that if our government officials keep treating Indigenous folks and First Nations as second-rate citizens.
Absolutely. I think reconciliation is such a huge just a huge topic on its own. It's definitely something that I think universities and just like schools have taken into account quite clearly. We want to honor Indigenous reconciliation, really focus on that connect between international students, newer people, immigrants who are coming in, and then people who've been here since, you know, the dawn of time, and who, you know, been here, the traditional lands of Indigenous peoples, and really honoring that. So I think we're doing, from a student perspective at U of M, we're trying our best to really focus on reconciliation, making sure things like Orange Shirt Day are recognized, that Indigenous Students Month in November is recognized, like all these things to really raise awareness and also making sure that there's courses available for students to take more information in. But also just from looking at that governmental side, we've tried to raise money for the Bray Road landfill. We did a Red Dress Day drive, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, another completely like really, really big topic. And that's been very prominent in the news, I will say, lately, just with like those outcries from the Indigenous community to find those missing and murdered and Two-Spirit individuals. So I think it's really important for governments to take action, because, you know, as students, we see this and recognize that this is happening, and we can't heal unless there's efforts made towards things that are happening in our own community.
Exactly. And I know some people might be wondering, you know, like, why are we talking about First Nations issues in terms of this current conversation that you and I are having? And I think it's important because as we're building our country, as more immigrants and newcomers are coming in, they need to be aware of the history of discrimination and racism that the Canadian government and the churches had here on First Nations, Inuit, and Métis folk. And that's the only way we're going to be able to celebrate diversity in the future, or that everyone has a chance to come to the table, whether that is someone coming in, someone who has lived here for many, many years, and the peoples that have called Turtle Island home for forever. So like that, just to put some context for the listeners out there.
For sure. I 100% agree with that. And I think there's so much opportunity to, once again, that aspect of collaboration with Indigenous communities, because they have such a great way, or their teachings are so special in the sense where they find room for growth, and there's sustainability aspects to it. There's way for innovation. There's way for connectivity. I actually went to a conference, and like this line really sticks with me, where it was actually Negan Sinclair, and he said, he's a very powerful speaker, and he said before Wi-Fi and things like that used to exist, they actually had rivers to communicate. And I thought that was such a beautiful analogy, because there were these sustainable ways of working together instead of having the idea of land ownership. And that's a, once again, a really big conversation we can dive in.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a different topic for another time. But yeah, there's so many things that we can learn from each other, ancient teachings. And, you know, the best future is one where we can all share our ideas and have equal voice. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I know this was a little last minute putting it all together, but I feel it's very informative, and it's great to see your perspective and just hear about some of the efforts that the school is doing and the students. And we would definitely love to talk with you again in the future about some of those other initiatives that the school is doing.
For sure. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm really glad that there's that partnership between U Multicultural and AWOW, so I could share something that really resonates with me and share that youth perspective. And thank you so much for once again having me.
Where can people go to find out more about Asian Women of Winnipeg?
Mm-hmm. So for the older generation, we have Instagram, Facebook, as well as Twitter. And we also have our website, AsianWomenOfWinnipeg.com, where you'll find links to all our social media.
I hear you calling to me, your forgotten wisdom through me, into air that drew me, softly creeping down to bow. Going to the forest, see shining flowers, sweet perfumed hours, wildness of doubt. And when the birds peek out to sing of nature's cloud, they were so long and loud in the forest, bathing the beauty, invited to cooling, emboldened and unruly, going to the forest, warm stones they find me, barefoot we tread deep. The wet earth is squishy. And all this time I've wasted, I could have breathed and tasted, dived in wellsprings naked, longing to embrace the past, caressing rough edge darkness. Going to the forest, see shining flowers, sweet perfumed hours, wildness of doubt. And when the birds peek out to sing of nature's loud, they were so long and loud in the forest. We bathe in the beauty, invited so coolly, emboldened and unruly, going to the forest, see shining flowers, sweet perfumed hours. Wildness of doubt. Going to the forest. Going to the forest. Going to the forest. Going to the forest.
In Manitoba, about 1 in 6 people has a disability of some sort. That's approximately 175,000 people. Of that number, about 8,000 have an intellectual and developmental disability. Often, accessibility isn't a priority in society, and accessibility challenges can be much worse the further you leave urban centers. To increase awareness for the upcoming provincial election, Abilities Manitoba and Barrier Free Manitoba have created Disability Matters Vote. Let's get into it.
My name's Margot Powell, and I'm the Executive Director of Abilities Manitoba. So we're a nonprofit organization, and we represent the majority of services for adults here in Manitoba who have intellectual disabilities.
I guess that's my follow-up question would be, what is Abilities Manitoba? What do you all do? What sort of programs and services do you offer? And, you know, what does that, like, kind of representation of those with intellectual disabilities look like?
Just for context, in Manitoba, there are 93 different organizations that provide support to about 8,000 adults who have intellectual and developmental disabilities in our province. And there's approximately 10,000 people in the workforce in this sector. So we, Abilities, is ultimately, we aim to be a unified voice to represent the services. And we're really interested in excellence in services. So we really want people to ultimately just live their best life, however they define that. And so our role in that is to lobby and advocate with the government for needed changes and aiming to build the strength of all nonprofits in the province. In terms of programs and services, as I mentioned, we really want services to be as strong as possible. And so we aim Yeah, absolutely. Right. You want the best possible services you can. So we aim to do that by building capacity, by working together with those organizations who are our members and sharing information and collaborating and all of that good stuff. So coupled with the advocacy and aiming to see the needed changes, we're also working together as a collective for the betterment of people who are accessing the services in our province.
I really appreciate the work that you're doing, helping be an advocate and be a voice for a community here in Manitoba.
Thanks. Yeah, it's really it's fantastic work. There's amazing people that are in Manitoba that are such a pleasure to work with.
This is also close to myself, although it's been many years now since my uncle passed away. He had an intellectual disability, and he was kind of the life of the family for a long time. There are so many times where I just remember being a little kid, and he would just like grab us in headlocks and like give us these great big hugs. So,
oh, fantastic!
Yeah. So when we're talking about intellectual disabilities, you know, a lot of people could have a different picture of what that looks like in their head. So why don't we walk through a little bit about, you know, what is an intellectual disability and some of the other things about it?
There isn't, like, oftentimes people aren't given a specific label other than oftentimes people will say a global developmental delay. So sometimes, like some people with Down syndrome have an intellectual disability, some people with cerebral palsy, some people with autism, but it's not the case across the board, right? So it's hard.
So it's a very broad umbrella term then.
It absolutely is, yes. And it's not, yeah, it's really, it very much is broad. And I think we want to kind of like make sense of things in our head, but it really is a very broad category of people, and there often isn't a specific label that's necessarily attached.
I think that's something that we've all been learning just in terms of science, that, you know, things don't necessarily fit in a box like we'd like them to.
Yes, that's so true, isn't it?
You're talking about advocacy and, you know, the different things that we need from our government. And as it is a voting season coming up very soon, you know, it's more important than ever to be vocal and be active. So what are the sorts of things that you're advocating and fighting for at Abilities Manitoba?
Yeah, so we are, we always use election years as best as we can. And certainly we're advocating for a number of things. We're part of a we've partnered with Barrier Free Manitoba, and we've formed, it's called Disability Matters Vote. And that's a, yeah, it's a really cool nonpartisan public awareness campaign. So the aim of Disability Matters Vote is really just to amplify disability issues in our province, bring them to the forefront, and give a space and a voice to people who want to have elected officials and people running to be our elected officials have a better understanding of what some of the issues and challenges that they might face that that really need to be addressed. So with Disability Matters Vote, really we have three key aims of the campaign. The first is that all Manitobans, especially those with disabilities, are able to fully participate in the election activities, and those who are eligible to vote actually get out there and vote. That's a really, really critical one. The second is to promote priority attention to disability issues. And the third is for to support all Manitobans to make informed voting decisions. So there's some key pieces of work that we are doing as part of that. One is we're focusing on 20 specific constituencies in Manitoba, and those are the 20 constituencies who had the narrowest margin of victory in the last election. So there's the biggest possibility to swing a vote one way or the other in those constituencies, in theory. And so we're really wanting to focus there, our energies there with the constituents and also with the candidates, so that they're all well aware of the issues and that we get a really good sense of their commitment to be a part of the solution on some of those issues. So that's really good work, and we're always looking for people who may be interested in getting involved in their constituency or one of those 20 constituencies.
There's definitely still time to get involved.
Absolutely. This part of the campaign is just starting to gear up at this point. We really go hard kind of the last 6 weeks before the election. So about a month from now, things within individual constituencies will be really, really gearing up.
Yeah, so if people want to get involved with a collective movement that is, you know, fighting for the betterment of Manitobans, hey, it's a great place to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it sure is. We all, you know, regardless of the type of disability, people face many challenges. I mean, if you just look at the issue of accessibility alone, that's one of our five key issues that we're focusing on in the campaign. But it really, I mean, it's as varied as someone's different abilities are. So if I have a visual impairment, having an accessible website with accurate, you know, where my screen reader can work most accurately, that would be important to me. Having an ASL interpreter available, if hearing was an issue for me, is a, you know, totally different slant. I think we all take for granted things like the door buttons that automatically open doors, or curb cuts. Like, those are all in the name of accessibility, but everybody benefits from those. I often notice moms or dads with strollers using the curb cuts, and right, you don't have to jump up and down curbs. And so I really think that at the end of the day, accessibility is one of those issues that we all benefit from in the end.
Exactly. Providing spaces for individuals. And when we're just looking here in Manitoba, though there are these small victories here and there, I constantly hear stories of individuals who have a physical disability that are still experiencing challenges, whether that's buildings or places that haven't been updated to allow them to go up and down within the facilities there, or when we're looking at sports and activities, just a complete lack of funding to provide either specialized equipment or, you know, having facilities to go and train and participate together.
It's incredibly important that we have an accessible province for all. One of the things that we've been really advocating for under the Accessibility for Manitobans Act, there's a number of standards in there. And we've been advocating for a standard that's called the built environment, so that buildings all public spaces, whether they're indoor or out, but anything that we build is built in an accessible way. That standard had actually been changed by the government to be called the design of public spaces. So backing away from buildings, which really leaves a lot of Manitoba inaccessible for so many of our citizens.
Exactly. Buildings are a big part. When, you know, when you're in a city, what do you think about? Buildings.
Yep, exactly. And if you can't get into them, then we need to do better.
It's one of those things when you're someone who doesn't have a family member or friend or colleague that's either intellectually or physically disabled, it can be oh so easy to completely forget about you know, those sorts of accessibility needs, watching on TikTok, where they're like showing different sorts of devices and things that can help open up jars, for example. And then you see people on the line being like, what sort of useless thing is here? Just open the jar. Well,
yeah,
not everyone has the dexterity or the hand strength to open jars. So having that sort of thing can help. So just the small things in life that many take for granted, you know, some people have a little bit of a harder time.
Absolutely. I also think that's where technology gets really exciting, because there's so many new products out there that allow people to be much more independent without having to rely on someone to come and help them do something. So I think that's only going to continue to improve as the future unfolds.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big video game guy, and seeing some of the accessibility options that have been created for some people who have no use of their hands or legs, that they've now are able to play games with just their eyes, which is pretty impressive and pretty cool. But yeah, funding and research need to continue in these areas, and that's where advocacy and awareness comes in. You were mentioning ASL services, which reminded me of a story that came out of the United States not too long ago, of how they were just hiring. I guess it wasn't hiring. Someone volunteered their time to give ASL, but they didn't know it at all, and they were just kind of moving their hands on screen. So, like, this whole idea that they're like, oh, yeah, we need someone to perform ASL on this, but don't even look at the credentials of the person or put in the time or effort to make sure that this aspect of accessibility was given the due diligence it deserves, I think is also just indicative of that, oh, it'll be fine sort of thing, instead of just being like, oh yeah, there are people who need this.
Right. Yeah, it's not just about doing something because it looks good. It actually, it's functional. It's necessary for people to be fully involved and participate. And I think that might be challenging to understand until you're in that situation and can't access something that you need to, or you have a right to. It brings up all sorts of challenges for us, I'm sure.
Yeah. What are some of the other things in terms of accessibility or removal of barriers that Abilities Manitoba and this Disability Matters Vote campaign is kind of bringing awareness and to the forefront?
Yeah, I always love talking about this part. So we have five priorities, one of which I've spoken about already, and that's making Manitoba much more accessible. We also have priorities around basic needs. So people with disabilities there's a disproportionate number of people who have a disability and also live in poverty compared to the general population. And we know that that needs to change. People have a very challenging time often accessing adequate and affordable housing or accessible housing, and have to make all sorts of compromises on where they need to then move to in order to access those things that they need. Skilled workforce. So this is one that is very near and dear to our hearts at Abilities Manitoba. People who require support, they receive from disability support workers whatever type of support that they might need to live a full life. So that can look all sorts of different ways when you think about, you know, living a life and what you might need help with in order to do that to your fullest. There are very few standards in our field, working with adults with intellectual disabilities, around what qualifications you need to have and how much people are paid to do that really critical work. So we really need to raise the bar in Manitoba on and recognize that in order to have a strong and skilled workforce, we need to recognize the skills that we require them to bring. And we need to do that through training and education, but also through the dollar amount that they are able to take home at the end of the day, because a lot of people who work in our sector live in poverty as well. And that shouldn't be the case. It should be able to be a career for someone who really wants to continue to work in this field. And if people make that choice, it comes with some pretty big consequences to their pocketbook. And so that definitely, we need to make this into something that's where people can receive supports that are consistent. We see over 800 people come and go out of someone's life because of the lack of like consistency and the high rates of turnover in staffing. And it creates, as you can imagine, the like just how challenging that is for people to have to live through. To constantly be getting to know new people and trying to build a trusting relationship. And that person might be helping you get dressed or have a bath or use the washroom. And then they're gone and you're, you know, staff number 803 coming through the door. It's very challenging and it's really not fair to people with disabilities.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of impact that has on someone's mental health going through there, like you're trying,
absolutely,
you need help with something, and then, you know, someone comes in and you're like, oh great, I'm building a bond. Now they're gone. Okay, yeah. A new person is. Okay. And then just each time it just slowly wears you down.
It's so true. I heard this very compelling story about a woman who just called everybody the same name because she was so tired of trying to remember everybody's names, and they were always different, that she just called everybody Mary, right? And it just like, okay, Mary, whenever she needed anything. Cause, and I feel like that was just, was a very profound way to express the impact that that was having on her.
We're coming together and we're wanting to make a difference, looking at candidates that actually care, that actually wants to improve the lives of others. What are some other things that you're fighting for or trying to bring awareness to?
I would say another area is around services and resources. There's incredibly long wait lists for services. In some cases, wait lists don't even exist. I know people that have been waiting for more than 20 years to access residential services in our field. And people really need to be able to access what they need, where they need it, and when they need it. And I think Manitoba is unique in that, you know, the vast majority of our population lives in a very small part of Manitoba, which means we're very, you know, service rich in Winnipeg and surrounding and you know, close by. But the further you get away from Winnipeg, the more of the poverty of services and everything else there is. And so that creates an additional barrier for people with disabilities to try to get to Winnipeg to access what they need. So we need to do a lot better in that area as well.
You know, you drive up far enough north somewhere, and then eventually it's like, wow, how are you supposed to get anywhere? At that point, it's like there's nothing around.
And people really shouldn't have to leave their home community to live a full life to access what they need. It's a big challenge for so many people.
Well, I'm on board. I'm going to continue looking at what Disability Matter votes say, as well as Abilities Manitoba, to see, you know, what candidates I should be keeping an eye out for. Because, you know, I'm all about equitability and equality for all, that anyone can have the opportunity to live life to their fullest. So, Margo, where can people go to find out more about Abilities Manitoba, the work you do, as well as this campaign, Disability Matters Vote?
Yeah, so Abilities Manitoba, our website is Abilities Manitoba, spelt out Manitoba, spelt out in full, .org. So abilitiesmanitoba.org. And then Disability Matters Vote. We have a website, it's dmvote.ca. And we are approaching all of the political parties and asking them very pointed questions on each of our priority issues, and we plan to publish their responses on the website. As well, we ask a different set of questions to all of the candidates running in the election, and we post those on our website. So if you want to look into your own specific constituency and see what your candidates think on really important issues, that's where you'll find that information. You can also sign up to get involved in your constituency work that I had mentioned earlier, or to get a lawn sign. Hopefully people have seen the lawn signs around the province. And any other information you're looking for, we have a contact email, info@dmvote.ca, and we're happy to get people involved and mobilize the groundswell that that we expect to see leading up to the election.
Hey, thanks for listening. Make sure you tune in next Tuesday for more stories from your community. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.
Pra avenida cantar amor, sambar ao som da bateria já começou. É festa, alegria, pandeiro no ar, e essa harmonia a contagia. Vambora que o samba não pode parar. Deixe o coração livre para sonhar. É festa, alegria, pandeiro no ar, e essa harmonia a contagia. Vambora que o samba não pode parar. Amor, vem, vem para o meio do salão. Vem se acabar na multidão. Rei pirata, príncipe plebeu, hoje, meu amor, eu sou todo seu. É hora de vir pra avenida cantar amor, sambar ao som da bateria já começou. É festa, alegria, pandeiro no ar, e essa harmonia a contagia. Vambora que o samba não pode parar. Deixe o coração livre para sonhar. É festa, alegria, pandeiro no ar, e essa harmonia a contagia. Vambora que o samba não pode parar. Amor, vem, vem para o meio do salão. Vem se acabar na multidão. Ei, pirata, príncipe plebeu, hoje, meu amor, eu sou todo seu. É carnaval, eu vou me acabar. É carnaval, vamos.